Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a community of people seeking to live our lives in the orienting center of God's love in the midst of our post-Christian world, learning to lead like Jesus, live on mission, and make disciples. In nature, gravity is the phenomenon that brings stuff together, objects as small as atoms and quarks and as large as stars and galaxies. We believe the gravity of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ. The Gravity Leadership Podcast is curated conversations on what it looks like to practically orient our lives and our leadership in the love of Christ, the gravity that holds everything together.
Hey, welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. This is Matt Tevi. I'm joined by
Ben Sternke.
We are two of the co-founding members of Gravity Leadership, and we are in a series right now on our missional theology axioms, and we're to axiom number 5, I believe.
We are.
Is that right?
Yep.
And I just want to hit a quick reset button. I know you've probably listened to the first 4. If you haven't, that would be a good idea to do that before you listen to this one. All the axioms build on and incorporate the ones before it. So they're not meant to stand alone, although I guess you could jump in here if you like to be confused.
Yeah.
Or outraged.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it would necessarily outrage you, but you could step in at this point and just try to make sense of things.
I take a bit of existential delight knowing that some people might be outraged and confused by what I'm saying.
Okay, that's good.
Is this a safe space to make that confession?
That's fine. You can talk about that.
Okay, well, there's another axiom for that, I think. Yeah. But this axiom today, well, we'll get to that axiom. Axioms are simply little syllogistic, pithy statements of wisdom that are meant to take complex, maybe profound or truths, and make them simple without hopefully being reductionistic or simplistic, right?
Right.
So one of the axioms I thought of we hadn't mentioned in previous podcasts is the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Right? Yeah.
Which is an axiom that is meant to communicate the radius or diameter of a tree and how apples hit the ground really close to it.
Right, exactly. It's literal, and that's exactly what it means.
Right? It's the clear, plain sense. That's the plain sense reading of that axiom, Ben.
It's the literal, inerrant reading of
you
of
heard
that
it
axiom.
Here. Yeah. You heard it here first. No, yeah. So that what that means is basically, and I'll share this maybe on this podcast, but my son last night was having a really hard time being content and happy with the things he had. And we'd gone to see a movie. We saw Peter Rabbit. If you like British humor, full of British humor, that movie.
Yeah, and I like British humor.
I was laughing at most of the jokes, and my son was like blank-faced. I don't think he got them. But he enjoyed the movie nonetheless. Yeah. We did that together. We had popcorn together. He went to a friend's house, played basketball, and played PlayStation 16, however many PlayStations there are together, the latest one. And then we were watching March Madness together, and he was sitting on the couch complaining about the things he didn't get that day. And I realized, like, I lost it. I actually yelled at my son, and I yelled in a way that my wife was like, "You both need a timeout." You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean.
So, reflecting on that with my wife later, I realized like one of the reasons why that bothers me so much about my son, his inability to have gratitude and contentment with how good his life is amazing,
right?
And like staring in the chasm of amazingness, all he can do is complain that it's not there's no awesome in the amazingness,
right? Yeah,
and I realized that that's me.
Yeah,
that's me.
Yeah,
the apple does not fall far from the tree.
Right. And that's probably why it drives you crazy.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 It's exactly why it drives me crazy.
Right. That's the way it is with all of us.
So anyway, well, maybe we'll return to that little story, that little...
Yeah. I mean, to be clear, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree is not one of our missional theology axioms.
It's just an axiom.
It's an example of an axiom and how they work.
Maybe we should do this podcast on that axiom because I think there's a lot for me.
There's a lot in that. Probably there is.
Yeah, so yeah. An axiom then is that, and we introduce these missional theology axioms as paradigms or constructs through which we think that Jesus saw the world and interpreted the world and lived in the world, and so they're not meant to be new, they're not meant to be radical in sort of a avant-garde way, but rather they're meant to bring us back to the scandalizing paradigms that Jesus inhabited the world in as the most fully true human who ever lived. And some of the reasons why I think in like late modern 21st century Christianity, we have lost sight of these constructs. So it's not that we don't understand them, but we've forgotten how to see the world through them. right?
Yeah. And incidentally, that's why they're important for our discipleship as well. This is why we start our coaching, Gravity Leadership Academy, we start our coaching with these axioms because they're foundational for our discipleship. If we're going to live into Christ-likeness, if we're going to become more like Jesus, we need to learn how to see the world like Jesus saw it.
Yes.
And sort of operate within the constructs that he was operating in.
Yes.
And so this is kind of where we begin our training.
Yeah, because oftentimes people need these things named for them because they've intuited them. And oftentimes people need to be confronted with them because their operating system, this is another metaphor, their mm-hmm. operating system can't run the Jesus program because the code at the ones and zeros are wrong.
Yeah. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So, just to recap, the first paradigm: God is always present and at work. God doesn't show up; we wake up. There's places and instances where God is more fully present than others, but He is always present and at work. So that means we can begin right where we are in our discipleship, in our sanctification, yeah. in our formation to become more like Christ. Number two, God is like Jesus, and there's no un-Christ-likeness in Him at all. I was talking to somebody who had listened to our podcast, and they said, you know, this is tough because all the four things you mentioned in that podcast about how God is not what God is not like, right? God is not a demanding judge. God is not a deterministic control freak.
Right.
Right.
The doting grandpa.
Right.
You know, all those
right.
images.
He said, it's hard because God is all these things, but He's not just them. And I realized, like, that's not how I think about it.
No.
So even the way this person heard what we were talking about, he said, well, all those are incomplete pictures of God, but you need to put the doting grandpa and the deterministic micromanager and the demanding judge and the distant deity. You got to put them all together. And if you put them all together, that's who God really is.
Mm.
And I, at the moment, I just was so stuck in my head. That happens to me sometimes. I get lost. I didn't have a chance to respond to him, but that's not. So don't hear what we weren't saying.
Right.
We're not saying 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4
right. You have to add them all together. It's not an amalgamation.
No. This isn't a bricolage God. How you like that?
We just used the words bricolage and amalgamation within 5 seconds of each other.
Yeah. Well, maybe
we just
this
lost like 25
listeners. People. Yeah. They unsubscribe immediately.
Yep.
No, it's not. We're not putting... this isn't sort of a... divine pastiche, where you paste all these things together and you get a God, but right. rather Jesus. When we start with Jesus and we let Jesus define who God is, and we don't take anything off the table that we see in Jesus of, well, that's just Jesus being a human, as though we can define and determine what is divine apart from Jesus, and then hold that over Jesus and suss out what is human and what is divine, mm-hmm. right? If we do that, then He helps us understand those parts of Scripture where God seems like a demanding judge. What's really going on there?
Right.
Where yeah. those parts of Scripture where God seems distant and detached and uninterested. What's really going on there?
Right.
Right?
So Jesus is our hermeneutical key to understand. It's not that Jesus is like, yeah, He's a distant deity and He's a doting grandpa. Yeah. Like, He doesn't bring them together. He helps us realize... He helps us realize what was actually happening in there, in these pictures where we interpreted a doting grandpa, in these pictures where we interpreted
yes.
a demanding judge. Which is, by the way, this is the univocal proclamation of the New Testament, right? In the past, we had these other...
Convince me of this, Ben. Go.
In the past, you know, God spoke through in many ways, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But now we have His Son. And so there's this clear, He is the full representation of who God is. This is the beginning of Hebrews.
Yeah.
Like, this is what the New Testament proclaims over yes. and over. The first part of John yes. is the same way.
And so it's almost like in the past, we didn't have direct access to God. It's almost like we saw through a veil dimly, Ben.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like
That's a good phrase. Let's write that down.
Right. I'm going to write something about that. No, it's almost like we couldn't see God directly. Like we saw him dimly, like yeah. through a darkened glass.
Yeah.
And so some of our conceptions of who God were lacking or insufficient.
Right.
Or perhaps even wrong.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So this is fully biblical.
Right.
And it's fully Christocentric to say these things. Right. But it disrupts the way we usually make sense of, for instance, those parts of God that we're embarrassed to talk to our kids about.
Yeah.
Or exactly. unbelievers about.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So God is like Jesus.
It can be scary. All right, we're still in the review.
I know.
Like,
got to get through
9 minutes into this podcast.
Maybe this is just a review episode.
I don't, maybe.
Okay, who knows what's going to happen? God is like Jesus. Third, God is so real, he most fully meets us in reality. This axiom was essentially what we wanted to communicate, whether we did or not, is still up for debate. But we wanted to communicate is that we live our lives on the exteriors and the margins of reality. We live mm-hmm. distracted. We live distanced. We live denying who we are and where we really are. And some of it is due to the fact that we aren't present. We aren't fully present where we are. And some of it is due to the fact of sin wants us to hide and not fully reckon with who we are.
Yeah.
Right? We want to hang out in trees and behind fig leaves mm-hmm. and try to catch glimpses of God, but not be fully seen, fully known.
Yeah.
And so this is about how like God will meet us in our falsity, but when he meets us there, he's calling us into reality.
Yeah, he's saying, let's talk about what's real. Where are you?
Right.
You know, come out here. And then, like, what have you done? Talk to me about what actually happened. This is the, you know, Genesis 3.
Exactly. Yeah. So, like, last night when I lost my biscuit on my mm-hmm. 9-year-old, mm-hmm. and my wife was like, you need a timeout, young man, to both of us.
Yeah.
What I had to reckon with is where I wanted to meet God was in my son's disobedience of being content.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted sort of some justification and rationale for my anger.
Yeah.
That you aren't appreciating how good of a dad I am right now.
Right, right.
Right?
Right.
Right?
Yeah, totally.
And I wanted God to meet me in justifying how angry I was because my son was being obstinate and obdurate. That's probably the best word for what he was doing.
Yeah.
But what my wife helped me see was that, no, where you really are is you really are dealing with your own shame. This is you offloading your shame of how you really are,
mm-hmm.
and you're projecting it onto your son,
yep.
and he doesn't deserve that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So then what it looked like for me to meet God where I really was to go into my son's room last night and confess to him that that's what's happening, mm-hmm. ask his forgiveness, and then proclaim some good news to him about his worth and how he doesn't deserve to be treated like that.
Yeah.
Whew, man. And then I did that again this morning. And he was like, Dad, shut up. I'm trying to read. So
I get it.
Maybe it was more important for me than it was for him. But that's what we mean by God being so real. He meets us where we really are.
Yeah.
All right. And we mean other things by that too, but let's keep moving. Did we do this one? Axiom 4? God cares about it more than we do?
Pretty sure.
Does that sound familiar?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, this is just simply, Ben, there's a high achievers among us.
Mm-hmm.
People who are highly competent, high achievers.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're called type A personalities.
Right.
And we are used to getting things done and making things happen mm-hmm. in the world. And when we can't make mission and discipleship happen the way we idealize it,
mm-hmm.
we often despair. We often get frustrated.
Yeah.
We often get like really cranked up, irritated.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that we notice in Jesus's life is that he lives in the freedom and permission that God is present and at work, and he cares more about the people he wants to reach than he does.
Yep.
So he's able to let people walk away sad,
right.
because he knows God cares more about them than he does,
mm-hmm.
and that he it's not up to him to make the rich young ruler repent. Like, he doesn't take that upon himself as something that he has to accomplish, but he holds out the kingdom reality and lets this person choose yes or no.
Yeah.
There's a great freedom and a release of mm-hmm. pressure, right?
Right.
That comes when we're able to trust God cares about this more than me.
Right. But it doesn't offload our own. So I'm thinking about Jesus weeping over Jerusalem, right? So I think the temptation, if God cares more about it than I do, my other temptation is to like step back and say, well, forget this.
Yeah.
You know,
you know, go to apathy.
Or, right. I didn't like a rich young ruler. I didn't want a rich young ruler anyway.
Yeah. Who needs that rich
guy?
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah.
Right. Right. But that's not what Jesus does. He holds this tension. He holds this space of saying, I know that God cares more about Jerusalem than I do. Which, you know, I mean, it's kind of a weird I mean, it's kind of an inter-Trinitarian conversation there.
Yes.
But...
Can you explain how that happens?
But what Jesus is doing in weeping over Jerusalem is doing... sometimes our discipleship leads us into that place where that's all we can... We can't make something good happen, so we weep.
Yes.
We weep. Rather than shut off our heart. Because I know that for me, shutting off my heart is the other temptation.
Yeah.
Besides caring so much that I want to control things and
make
things happen.
Either I take the pressure upon myself to be God.
Yeah.
Or I shut my heart down and just stop caring.
And just stop caring.
Those are the ditches we fall into.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And what Jesus models for us is a fierce trust that God is present at work, that the God who's present at work is fully love.
Yeah.
Right? And that he can... And then Jesus is free then to feel disappointment or elation.
Right.
Right? Without taking on himself more responsibility than God's given him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Totally. And that's what we learn. That's walking, you know, in the way of Jesus. That's what we learn from him.
Now sometimes people hear these axioms or these realities and their response is, well, yeah, but Jesus was God.
Right.
And I'm not God.
Right.
Right? So they sort of say, yeah, that's true. But, and you hear this a lot, people talk about Jesus was just playing the God card there.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Maybe he sees the reality of Judas's heart and says, what you need to do quickly. Or he sees all these people really excited about him at the end of John 2, and they believed in him. But for his part, Jesus didn't believe in them because he knew the hearts of men, and he wasn't going to entrust himself to them. And they say, well, yeah, this is where Jesus played the God card. And this might be scandalous. I don't know why it is.
I don't know either.
But let's just I'm just going to declare this, and then you can tell me why I'm wrong. I think that Philippians chapter 2
exactly
unequivocally states that Jesus chose repeatedly not to play the God card.
That's right. I'm not going to disagree. I'm not going to tell you why you're wrong.
Come on,
I agree with that.
It would make such a better podcast if you would just
if you disagree with that.
Yeah, if you forget to disagree with it, just email Ben at ben@gravityleadership.com. So he doesn't consider his divinity as something to be exploited and used.
Right.
But he offers it. He lays it down.
Mm-hmm.
He's a kenotic. The Greek word there is kenosis, or self-emptying. He's emptied himself of his divinity.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that we still have to reckon with is how self-emptying divinity is the clearest example of what divinity is that we have.
Yeah. Yeah.
We still haven't reckoned with that. I mean, you and I.
Yeah.
But I also mean like the Christian church.
Totally.
Like I mentioned this last time, like we still fashion the God, Yahweh, as like some Zeus God holding thunderbolts, sitting on clouds, zapping people.
We think of kenosis as a temporary situation. Kenosis meaning the self-emptying.
A strategy to get to the cross.
Right, right. It was a temporary situation for Jesus to solve a problem that the Trinity had. Like, oh gosh, what are we going to do now? You know what? One of us has to empty ourselves. Who's it going to be? And then they drew straws.
No, they rock, paper, scissors.
Rock, paper, scissors. Okay, it's the Son. Okay, you need to be born. But what Christ is revealing is not a temporary situation to solve a problem. Christ is revealing that kenosis, which is the self-emptying, and cruciformity, which means going to the cross, are the fullest revelation of who God is.
Yes.
That's what God is. That's who God is.
Yes.
He is kenosis. He is... The crucifixion shows us that.
And that wasn't able to be seen by the Israelites in the wilderness, for instance.
Right. Not even the disciples. This was a total mystery until the resurrection. They were like, wait a second. You know what I mean?
But even then, it wasn't.
It took hundreds of years, right, of reflection to really come up with this.
Probably. I mean, even in the Matthew 28, the Great Commission, the thing that gives me so much hope and helps me remember, as I'm investing in people and discipling people, keeps me patient and humble in what I can accomplish, is, you know, in that Matthew 28 passage, we're told that they're on the mountaintop and they worshiped, and we're told some doubted.
Right.
Some doubted. And there weren't that many people there, right?
Right.
I don't know. We don't have
an
account.
Probably could have named them.
We don't have a count.
Yeah.
Because they didn't take tickets, and we don't have receipts. But I think, you know, maybe 100 people, maybe 70, right? And some of those people doubted. So there's a sense in which this was such a paradigmatic mind. It was like a complete mind blow for the people of the day.
Yeah.
And it still is for us. I think I think we recruit God into our own constructs and systems.
Yeah, totally.
Of about who he must be. And things like this, that God cares about it more than me, that doesn't mean I can, that God takes control and I employ God to take control of things, but there's a kenosis and a cruciformity at the heart of God that Jesus reveals. Man, it feels like we just discovered that mine and we haven't plumbed its depths at all.
Yeah.
What it means to witness.
Yeah, and it affects our leadership and our discipleship in so many ways. Because and this gets into the axiom we want to talk about today as well, in the sense that I think so much of our imagination about what it means to lead others is not kenotic or cruciform. The way that we think about leading others, we kind of default back into, okay, now I'm going to try to control situations and make things happen and influence people. And, you know, like we all of a sudden have these control strategies
yes.
that take over.
Yes.
Not really believing that God cares more about it than we do. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we easily abandon the framework that Jesus operated in when it's time to, like, you know, okay, now it's time to get to work. All right, I got to plant a church. And then we just resort back to strategies that are
rooted
in... To
coerce and control things.
Right, right. I'm trying to make something happen here, rather than, okay, well, how did Jesus do this?
Yeah.
And how do I lead in a kenotic way?
Yeah, right? And I just want to say this, too. We might not get to this axiom. This might just be like an intermission.
Yeah,
maybe. Like a summary intermission podcast. Because
yeah,
I just want to... Ben and I are planning a church.
We are.
The Table Indy. And we have tried to plant this church, not with a huge launch and some sort of 3-year strategic plan and number goals and financial goals, but rather with tending to God's presence, gathering on the grace we're seeing, looking for persons of peace, moving towards them prayerfully and in this kenotic way. When things don't happen that we want to happen, not using our own personal force or will to make them happen,
right.
We can be pretty persuasive.
Yeah.
More or less, we can throw weight around. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In terms of just... privilege and power and resources.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's stinking hard.
Mm-hmm.
Like this isn't like the easier way. This isn't sort of like once you do this, then you're just tiptoeing through the tulips
right.
with Jesus and
yeah.
you know what I mean? It's one yeah. big Michael W. Smith song every day.
Right. Or like a hippie commune.
No.
Everybody's happy.
No. It's really hard. It's really
yeah.
hard. But I was talking to a member of our church a couple days ago and I was trying to describe this dynamic that God cares about it more than we do. And so we then as leaders inhabit what we call a mutual submission posture,
right?
Communal discernment. So mm-hmm. one of the articles I'm writing now for Gravity Leadership is about how we have this idea of top-down leadership, like a hierarchical kind of command and control leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you have a benign dictator up there, it can go all right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But as soon as, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And so unaccountable, like people with lots of power, they end up using and abusing people.
Mm-hmm.
And so then a lot of people react to that by kind of a flat leadership, just a democracy.
Nobody's
right?
a leader.
Nobody really owns their leadership. We kind of go with the flow, like the lowest common denominator
yeah.
sort of
yeah.
wins. And he was just reflecting on how like he's been a part of both those communities and how they're rubbish. They,
right.
they just don't work.
Yeah.
And I was describing how like what we're trying to do is not in that spectrum. It's not in that binary. But we're looking to lead from a center out perspective, primarily because that's the best language we've got to describe the leadership that Jesus seemed to inhabit
yeah.
and model.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'm telling him the story of how we would discern something that he went through at a previous church, and he just starts weeping.
Mm.
Like he just started crying.
Yeah.
And he was like, that's so beautiful. Like, and I'm like, yeah, it is beautiful. And as I'm telling like how we would lead through this,
mm-hmm.
right? I'm thinking, I'm not even sure I have the character
yeah.
in the moment to lead like this.
Right.
Like, I have no idea. Like, that's the vision. The vision is to lead like this. I'm
yeah.
not sure if I'm able to do that yet,
mm-hmm.
but I'm committed to becoming that kind
right.
of person.
Right. It takes a tremendous amount of character to lay down what you want because there's so much at stake for us. You know, like if we're going to plant a church and we want to, you know, control and coerce in order to make this happen, there's tons of stuff that's at stake for us in that, right? We got our livelihood that's at stake, right?
Yes, our living.
Our living is at stake here. And so that feels like, well, man, that's really hard to let go of.
Yep.
That's really hard to trust God with.
Yeah.
There's our significance, our sense of like, you know, am I a significant person? That's at stake in a lot of these things. And
yeah.
that's really hard to trust God, you know, when he says, I've adopted you as my child, so therefore you are significant. We've also got a sense of belonging. that's at stake for us in this. Like, if I don't create community here, then, you know, what am I going to do with my loneliness? What am I going to do with, you know, how I feel about, you know, not having any friends and all of that kind of stuff? So,
yes.
So it does, leading in this way, it brings us back to the cross again and again and again, where Jesus says, do you trust me? Do you trust me? Will you take another step?
Yeah. So then God cares about it more than we do. Isn't just sort of a mirror of God's good all the time and all the time God is good.
Right.
Or let go and let God.
Yeah.
Rather, it's like, it's this invitation to work out your salvation with fear and trembling mm-hmm. as you embrace the cross and empty yourself.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's not easy.
No.
It's not easy.
No.
And it feels like, at least in our church plant, where we're actually working these things out with fear and trembling, it feels precarious. It feels dangerous. Mm. And like when you have a particularly stressful week mm-hmm. where a lot of the bad news at work in your life is confirmed or not challenged by good news, yeah. like you end up losing your biscuit on the couch watching March Madness with your 9-year-old because you're, you know,
right.
there's
all this pent up, all these things that are at stake for you that you haven't named.
Yeah.
You know, they get built up.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, and this did end up being a review or, you know, intermission.
I don't know. Episode. I think there's so many things to say about each of these axioms.
Yeah.
And just recapitulating them here and like talking about some of the responses and reactions I've been mm-hmm. hearing people share, it's been really helpful for me, Ben.
That's why we do this. No, but it does connect with our next axiom, which will be the next episode, because if God cares more about this than we do and we can trust him and he's good, then our next axiom, little preview, is that the things that God does through you are the same things that he does in you.
Yeah.
And so this connects because as leaders, oftentimes our imagination is that the way we lead is by doing something to somebody else.
Influence.
I'm going to try to get these people to change and do something different, as though we were outside the system, as though we were not participating in the life of a community ourselves,
yes.
as though leadership was something that is completely distinct from being like participation in a community. But rather, the transformation that we want to see happen in our community through our leadership is also the transformation that God is going to do through us. In us. He's going to do it in us. So the leader ends up being, we'll talk more about this in our next episode, but the leader ends up being the most transformed person in the whole system.
Yes. And not before you become a leader, but leadership is the crucible in which you're transformed.
Right.
The role, the responsibility, I'm not going to say office because I don't like that word when we describe leaders. The role and responsibility, mm-hmm. The calling of being, the vocation of being a leader
yeah.
is the crucible in which your character is formed.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And so we'll talk about that more next time. This little excursus, this little, we did a detour here mm-hmm. on the way through these axioms. I think hopefully it was beneficial.
Story of our lives. Story of our lives.
Yeah. Each chapter starts with, and the next detour.
Yeah. Right.
Anyway, we hope this is helpful for you. Thanks for joining us today. As always, we want to hear from you, so please contact us at, is it podcast? Info?
podcast@gravityleadership.com.
Yeah, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you found it helpful, please let us know by leaving a rating and review on iTunes or wherever you review podcasts. You can also email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com to ask a question or suggest a topic for a future episode. And join our online community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles that we found interesting or helpful in our work as local pastors and practitioners of discipleship and mission. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join.